Listener Production. Australia Today's Weekly Wrap.
Our last Australia Today program of the year, and what a year of news, of natural disasters, political change with a new Labor government. Of course, a year when we lost Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. And the people of Ukraine, of course, have suffered a year of invasion from the Russians. And that's a conflict that changed the global economic outlook with an energy crisis. And sadly, this week, the year ended with the senseless death of two young Queensland police officers brutally executed in a shooting that took six lives. For us, it's been a pleasure to cover these world-changing events on the Listener app and the Triple M regional network. This will also be the last Australia Today program. For us, that is a sad moment as well. We have so much enjoyed talking in particular to regional Australia, especially as we are about to hear about those devastating floods that swept through Brisbane and the Northern Rivers, Wide Bay, Western Downs, and then, of course, Western and Southwest Sydney, to the greater west of New South Wales, Forbes and Molong and Yugara, and further south still to the Victorian river towns of Rochester and Echuca. Programs like this, I think, importantly talk to the locals. Other mainstream capital city media often don't get to. So to my great colleague, Natasha Belling, whose calm, professional and caring support, thank you. And to Tara Maloney, the super producer for all the content that kept the wheels turning. And to Simon and Helen before that, Matt, thank you very much. Let's get into our year in review. Natasha Belling, this is going to be interesting going back through this.
Can I just take this opportunity, Steve, to say what an absolute honour and joy it has been to work with you. Not only are you an extraordinary journalist and broadcaster, but you're very, very kind and giving, and you have a wonderful sense of humour, and what an absolute pleasure and honour it's been to work with you. And to do what I love is giving a voice to regional people, because as you mentioned earlier, often they don't get a platform or a voice, and we've been very passionate on Australia Today about doing that.
We have, and you haven't had to see me face to face. That's been the other advantage of working with me for the last 18 months. You've been able to do it remotely because of COVID and Zoom.
What a roller coaster it's
been. I haven't
mentioned
here COVID.
I know.
So how would we forget something like that? You and I lived through all of 2022 and 2021 with COVID.
With a pandemic. And homeschooling, which still triggers me.
And police chasing me because I dared walk out the house without a mask on.
Can you talk about that?
Handcuffing me and telling me to go.
Playgrounds again. Locked up playgrounds. It's been an extraordinary roller coaster. When you look at what we've experienced, and we've been very lucky, Steve, we've had jobs and we haven't lost loved ones. Mm. It's been a roller coaster ride.
It's been, this year in particular, has been extraordinary.
Mm.
Not to mention Harry and Meghan. I mean, really, you know.
This is someone
the highlight
who
of your
refused
year.
To watch the series but then had a complete analysis of it because you were forced to watch it, correct?
Correct. I think we do need to put into context the flood situation because, I mean, it was extraordinary where they hit and when they hit. And your mind just, you know, forgets these things. So we started 2022. And we were on air from mid-January. By the time we got to the end of February, the Northern Rivers area and Brisbane were just smashed. So in Brisbane, 28 February, the Brisbane River height reached 3.8 metres. And then you had, of course, what happened in Lismore. Now, who could ever forget that? The Wilson River reached 14.4 metres in that town. That surpassed all other flood records by more than 2 metres. Swept through that whole community. Multiple deaths, as we know, destruction, billions of dollars worth of damage. And I was talking to Steve Krieg the other day. They've still not recovered from
and
that.
Steve, that was unfolding when we were actually on air. I really clearly remember that moment where we were starting to see pictures come through on television and we were thinking, oh my gosh, what is going on in Lismore? And then remember we were on air and the only way all of these people could communicate was often through Facebook saying, you know, my loved one or my friends on the roof of their house, they can't get out. And of course, we all know what an absolute disaster was unfolding and that locals were stopped from getting in their own boats to go and rescue people that were trapped in their own homes.
On that day, one of the first people we spoke to was Lismore Councillor Ellie Bird. Here's how that unfolded. Ellie, how are you coping there?
All right, considering, thanks.
The levee bank itself, has that been breached?
Well and truly, the levee bank went over probably around about 2:30 a.m. this morning. And what we are currently seeing is unprecedented flooding in Lismore. So we're currently approaching a height of around 14 metres, which is higher than the highest flood on record. And it's looking likely to go even higher.
Natasha's been looking at the Lismore Facebook page. A lot of reports there about people being unable even to access rescue, including people trapped on rooftops. Is that happening, Ellie? Do you know?
Yes, that's correct. So we're seeing a situation where people who have never had water inside their houses before are being flooded. People have been absolutely caught out and are stuck in the houses. So lots of people are making their way onto roofs to attempt to wait for rescue. But we're also seeing that the SES rescue line and the 000 lines are overwhelmed. So people are having trouble getting through to log requests for assistance. So yes, currently there are a lot of people sheltering on their rooftops waiting for rescue crews to get to them.
So it was still unfolding. We were talking, you were checking on Facebook. Mm. And, of course, what happened, the SES could not cope with it because they had two boats, hadn't been funded properly by the various governments. So what happened? The local communities took to tinnies, jet skis, and started rescuing people themselves.
And we heard of terrifying stories of elderly women and elderly men, families and their young children trapped in the cavity of their roofs waiting for people. And then people were saying with mobile phones when they were running out of batteries, just record a message before it drops out saying where you are. I'm on this street in Lismore. Come and get me. And then during the program on Australia Day, we also spoke with Federal Nationals MP for Page, Kevin Hogan, who's been extraordinary in making sure the voices of his local residents are heard. Let's take a listen to what he said.
They are being overwhelmed, Steve. This prediction for the flood last night was at 12 metres or around 10 or 11 metres. And overnight with heavier rain, the river peak is now going to be 2 metres higher at 14 metres. So this is unprecedented. We have people who are in houses who have normally never been flood affected in the history of the region. So they are now surrounded by flood water and now have to be picked up in boats to make sure that they literally don't drown in their houses. So this is a severe situation. Everything is mobilised. I had ADF approval to come in support the region a few hours ago. Everyone from the Prime Minister down is aware of the gravity of the situation here. The situation is, though, because the weather event is still current, so this, you know, even at my place, the rain is still very heavy, the weather is still very volatile, that it is causing logistical issues to get some of that support in. But everything's mobilised, everything has been signed off and everything to support to get every resource here that we need. But it's a very grave situation right now. From the very earliest hours of this morning, literally I've been on the phone to every emergency services minister, state and federal, the defence minister, Peter Dutton, the prime minister, the premier, the deputy premier and the deputy prime minister. They are all aware. I've made very clear a number of hours ago that this is a life and death situation and everything needs to get mobilised, and it is being. That being said, there are literally weather logistical issues to get some of that support here. Obviously, roads and highways are cut. People can't get through. And even with aircraft, it is proving challenging given the current weather event is still here.
Kevin did an extraordinary job. And one of the things that we discovered when we were talking to him on that morning, it might have been 2 days later, I think, when we got to March, that the Bureau was predicting that the river would peak at somewhere around 11.5, and everyone started to say, okay, if it's 11.5, we might be okay. Well, it went to 14.5.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the Bureau has to look at its modelling. They got that completely wrong. Steve Krieg, we'll hear from him in a moment. He's still living it. We talked to him as recently as this week. But you remember one of the amazing rescue stories was Janelle Saffin. Now, she's the Labor MP for Lismore. Her husband actually was clinging to a tree for hours before he got rescued. But we managed to talk to Janelle. Janelle is tiny.
Yes.
Janelle's shorter than you. She's a very frail young woman, older woman, and she almost drowned.
Mm.
And she was so lucky. Here's how she told us she survived.
My only thought was, as the waters, and there were three of us, three women, you know, all similar age, because I stay in town when it floods. The roads cut off. So I stay in town in a house where it never floods. But as the water was rising and we're sort of hanging off the rafters on the veranda, it was like, okay, it's time, girls, let's go. So into the water, and we swum up the road, so to speak, and we said stick close to houses, you know, that we knew, like the water was sort of coming up to the roof. Our thought was, we've got to swim. Look, I knew it was a bit scary and we had to pass one channel. We managed to secure a tyre from under a tree, a full tyre, and it was buoyant. And, you know, I said, let's grab it. And if we go down the channel, hang on to it. or stay with it.
Ooh, wow.
Kangaroos just jumping past me.
You know, you did the right thing, but boy, that must have been frightening.
It was frightening, Steve, but worse was my husband was in the house, my house, it never floods, and it was up to his chin. And one of the neighbours who's got a studio next door, they're the Hussey Hicks, you know, the singers. Mm-hmm. And she come over in a canoe I'd given her, and tied with rope, and she held him up and managed to get him out. Someone arrived in a private boat. So it was pretty tense, but there were people all over Lismore like that. Also Mwoolumbah, they were rescued by the Tinny Army. All our locals went out. Our local SES did with the few resources they had, totally under-resourced, but we had people were rescued on jet skis, all sorts of things.
Don't be alarmed, folks. This is our Australia Today's program in review, looking back at these extraordinary floods that swept through Australia in March in particular, but they weren't over by then. By the way, Janelle, remember we got her back on? She got the canoe that had saved her, and she was going to mount it on the wall when she redoes her house.
But, Steve, what's blown me away by re-listening to those stories is as it was unfolding, and we're just about to speak about what happened in Yugara a couple of weeks ago when that town in the central west of New South Wales was decimated, is the resilience of these people. Listening to Janelle, she's talking about literally up to her neck in floodwater and trying to paddle out and survive.
Floating on a tyre.
So calm. And the resilience of these people. Keep in mind now we're in December. That happened in February. And so many of those residents in Lismore are still without a home and still without a business.
Yeah, we'll hear a bit from Steve Creek in a moment. But Yugara was particularly close to you because you know that area so well.
Yeah, I grew up in Mudgee and worked at Prime TV in Orange in my early years. It seems like 50 years ago now, but travelled across the central west of New South Wales and often covered all of these really important stories. Yugara is a very small community, but a lot of wonderful people live in that area. And it was absolutely terrifying. When that story first developed, exactly like Lismore, we didn't realise the enormity of it until we started to hear some of the stories. It was on the morning of Monday, November the 14th. Now, yet again, this is the elephant in the room, Steve. The local residents did not get a prediction of a massive flood. They were told there'd been floodwaters upstream and to prepare for possible flooding. But the best descriptions we had was it was an inland tsunami. Without any warning, a wall of water decimated this local town. We had many people.
So like Lismore, Yugara just was sitting there
sitting
unprepared.
Ducks. Absolutely. And we noted during our coverage that if this hit early on that Monday morning, if this had been in the middle of the night, there would have been hundreds of people dead. But we had lots of people talking to us about what was happening in Yugara on that awful morning, including we heard from one of the local residents and local member telling us about what had happened. This is Andrew G. Let's take a listen to what he was telling us about Yugara.
It's just heartbreaking for Yugara. That's all you can really say. It's words can't really describe the hurt and the pain that's going on in Yugara at the moment. And it's going to be a long, hard road to recovery. There are stories of great heroism here, I have to say. Community members, young blokes on trucks who are just going around pulling people out of homes with rising floodwaters and getting the RFS ladder off the truck and putting them onto the roof and the veranda of the pub. There was one guy who was telling me that he was in his ute. The water, it was a tsunami coming at him, picked up the ute and smashed it into the side of a house. So he was trapped in there, couldn't open the doors. Luckily, he was able to wind down the window of the ute, which was lined up with the window of the house. That's the only way he could get out. So he gets into the house, and in the house are three kids and a mum. So he helps the mum and three kids get into and then onto the roof. And he said just as he hoisted the last child up, the floodwaters were around his neck. Other families just had miraculous escapes. One family were caught in the floodwaters, and there was a trampoline that had kind of floated up next to a house, and they were able to kind of climb onto that and half bounce and half get onto the roof. Like, just crazy stories. And also, there's an air of great sadness in Yugara today because they've lost one of their much loved residents, and it's hanging very heavy at the moment. And today, it's clean up. So I've been in Yugara over the last few days working with my RFS brigade. And we were originally checking homes, and then once it got into the cleanup phase, we've been basically pumping out and hosing out people's homes. But there is massive devastation. It is Lismore-scale devastation with a smaller community. That's how I would describe it.
Well described. And the stories he told about those people and trying to be rescued is extraordinary.
How terrifying that story about that guy in the ute looking in his revision mirror and seeing a wall of water come towards him. But as we mentioned earlier, after Lismore, there were questions asked about the SES. Now, I'm not having a go at the local crews because they're extraordinary. But what are we doing moving forward about weather warnings and flood warnings with the Bureau of Meteorology? Because they got it terribly wrong both times with devastating consequences. And there's been a lot of criticism of local dams. What are we doing with water conservation, building dams, making sure water management is really important? 7:30 Report did a great investigation after Yugara asking serious questions about why those residents weren't given adequate warnings.
Well, I think Steve Krieg summed it up. He said that what we've got to do is use Lismore as an example of what not to do in the future.
Indeed.
And what where not to build, where not to let planning permission be given. Mm. And so mitigation, dams, all of the things you mentioned. This still goes on. I mean, we haven't even got to the Victorian floods, went through Echuca,
Southeast Queensland.
I mean, the whole country pretty much has been affected. So much so that we went back this week to check on Steve Krieg, the Lismore mayor, because he's been so generous to us on Australia Today all year. Here's what he told us.
I want to say right from the outset, thanks for sticking with us. You're the only broadcaster that has kept this story going for the last, as you say, 9.5 months. And on behalf of our city, I wanted to thank you for sticking with us, because it is a big news story and it's going to be a news story for the next 4 or 5 years.
That's why we've loved doing Australia Today,
absolutely,
helping out those communities. Natasha Belling, it's been a huge pleasure for me to work with you. All your professionalism, and I'm sure we'll see plenty of you next year. You've worked 7 days a week, but half the time. You've got to just take it a bit easier.
It's a joy working with
you're getting
you.
Getting on, Steve, just relax a little bit.
But what an extraordinary year. Now, you're a veteran of 50 years in the media. Have you ever seen a year like we've experienced in 2022?
Probably not. I mean, you can think of the big years that you you cover, things like, you know, September 11 and or the bushfires of 2019 and all of those major events. But this has been relentless. Every week, every month, there's been a massive story of one sort or another.
International.
We had a change of government, but you've got a war in Ukraine. You had Donald Trump threatening to come back again. I mean, it's been incredible. And we've lost so many people. I mean, you talk about me being in the media 50 years. It makes me feel old when you consider.
We know all these people.
All these people that are I've grown up with forever. I mean, you know, from when I was a baby, the Queen was the Queen.
Of course. We lost Queen Elizabeth, but also this year we lost cricketing legend Shane Warne.
Oh, that was
shocking death.
I still can't believe Warne's dead.
No, I know.
I still think he's going to turn up on the television commentating on the cricket with that cheeky grin on his face.
I know he'd be in heaven, but gosh, they'd have a good party in heaven considering who's up there right now.
Would they ever? Who else?
Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah, that was sad.
An extraordinary, you know, and I think we also, with all the tributes flowing for Olivia Newton-John, she fought an extraordinary battle against breast cancer. But not only was she a much-loved movie star, she was such one of the first famous Aussies in Hollywood. She was a great singer and, of course, from Greece. But she was also a huge campaigner and supporter of groundbreaking research into breast cancer.
Yep.
And she was instrumental in setting up that fantastic cancer centre in Melbourne, where she gave so many other Australians battling cancer the chance to fight.
And Judith Durham. I grew up the Seekers. I mean, I wanted the Double White album from the Beatles, but Mum gave me Seekers Live.
It still triggers you, doesn't it? Does it
it's
still
the
trigger you?
Worst thing I ever saw under a Christmas tree. I told Judith Durham this. I interviewed her a number of times face to face. I said, look, I love you dearly, but I didn't want your record. I wanted the White album.
And did they say that's the end of the interview?
She laughed. You know, she laughed. She had a great sense of humour. So take us through the reaction that happened once Queen Elizabeth passed away on our program. So we go back to Friday, September 9, our time, which I think was the 8th of September in the UK.
And remember, it was just days earlier she'd had actually sworn in the new British Prime Minister, Liz Truss.
Yeah,
now,
she
how
didn't
much
last
can.
Long.
It was quite extraordinary. But yet again, that last photo we saw of Her Majesty in public, where she was shaking Liz Truss's hand, is yet again instrumental to the fact that she was serving her country and her Commonwealth until the very, very
history
end.
In the making. We've had this year, history in the making.
Absolutely. And we found out it was around 3 a.m. our time on
That's
Friday,
right. I got
September 9.
I got a text message at 3 in the morning.
Steve, you're not going to be shocked by this. I saw that interesting statement that was released a couple of hours beforehand, and I was texting Ange Bishop saying, hang on, does this mean the Queen's death is imminent? And she said yes. So I was watching it unfold on Twitter and social media. So this is how the world found out through the BBC. It was Thursday, September 8 UK time, and this is how the world found out that Queen Elizabeth II, at the age of 96, had passed away.
This is BBC News from London. Buckingham Palace has announced the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. In a statement, the palace said the Queen died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. The King and the Queen Consort will remain at Balmoral this evening and will return to London tomorrow.
Makes me teary.
I cried when I found out.
Oh.
And it's just because she has been a constant. I haven't known another
monarch. It's even more than that. It's the tradition of Britain.
Yes.
With the voice of the BBC.
Yes.
This is the BBC. I mean, those words, this is the BBC, we're at war.
Yes.
With Hitler. I mean, that's history in the making.
And talking about the war, we also forget what an extraordinary legacy and what she had seen during her lifetime,
amazing.
Queen Elizabeth II. We know that her father, who was never supposed to be king, stayed in London as it was bombed during World War II. She had seen none of whatever any of us will ever see during our lifetime. And Ange Bishop.
Your great friend. She was there and you managed to get her on the program.
She was actually over there for a press junket with George Clooney and Julia Roberts for their new movie. And then all of a sudden the news broke. And very kindly I spoke with Ange and said, Ange, you know, her knowledge of the royal family is extraordinary. And this is what she told us on Australia Today of the huge impact and feeling in the UK as they lost their great monarch.
The feeling of emotion as I stand here looking at the balcony that Queen Elizabeth II first stood on when she was, well, withheld, which was just 1 year old, so 95 years ago, is quite incredible. And the emotional outpouring from the people who have gathered here on what is a very rainy night in London, not too chilly, but certainly the heavens have opened up, perhaps also shedding a tear for the loss of Her Majesty. Flowers are beginning to be laid at the gates, reminiscent of, you know, just over 25 years ago when we lost Diana, Princess of Wales. I've seen some people openly sobbing. I've seen so many faces and accents from around the world. There's people from around the world here. London, of course, always a tourist mecca, and all united in mourning this incredible woman who for 70 years was so constant, so reassuring in this chaotic world full of turmoil. The Queen was always there. And it's an immense sense of loss to be facing a future without her. I think we've known for some time that we were on borrowed time with Her Majesty. We knew she was unwell. She certainly was looking more frail than ever. But as soon as she smiled, as soon as she gave us that smile that we've seen for 70 years, something always made you feel reassured. No, she'll be fine. She'll be fine. And we saw that smile on Tuesday, as you say, just 2 days ago, when she swore in Liz Truss as new British Prime Minister. And so everyone thought, right, she's in Balmoral, she's in a happy place. She didn't travel to London, but that's fine. And so today has been an enormous shock when that message, that very unusual message, came from the palace just after lunchtime, saying she's under medical supervision and she was comfortable. And then we watched as her children and grandchildren made their way to Aberdeen Airport and then got in the car to travel to the castle there. It dawned on us all that, you know, no, this is it. This is going to be it. And it's just been the most dreadful feeling all day. I was talking to cabbies, talking to people in shops, you know, and they're all just, everybody was saying, we're just waiting for news, and it's an awful feeling. And then when it finally came, it was like the city let out a sigh of grief.
The grief of that day was extraordinary. Mm. I mean, and you couldn't get your head around the fact that finally the Queen was no longer with us and it was going to be King Charles III.
And as Ange said, she was the constant for us, especially during the turmoil of the last couple of years. And whether you're a monarchist or not, you have to have great admiration for an extraordinary leader that has lived through extraordinary times.
Special edition of Australia Today, looking back at the world-changing events during the year in 2022. We skip ahead to our great mate, Hugh Whitfeld from Seven, who does such an extraordinary job. We've spoken to Hugh in locations all around the world. Ukraine, he was there. And he was at the funeral on the, I think it was the 20th of September. So this is about 11 days after the Queen passed away. Here's how Hugh described what happened that day.
Look, it was perfect in every sense of the word. Not a step out of time, not a hare or a horse or even a corgi out of place. And I think those corgis, Sandy and Mick, waiting for Her Majesty outside St George's Chapel will go down as one of the pictures of the day, along with George and Charlotte, 9 and 7 years old, second and third in line to the throne, walking behind their great-grandmother's funeral. But this was just dripping in the pageantry and the pomp and the ceremony and the tradition that this country manages to pull off so successfully every single time, with 2,000 in the congregation at Westminster Abbey, including US President Joe Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron and Anthony Albanese and kings and queens and princes and princesses from right across Europe, even the Japanese emperor, the first time that he has attended a funeral for the death of a monarch outside Japan. So just remarkable pageantry and scenery, I guess, for people to look at. And then the personal little touches that Elizabeth was able to add to her plans as well.
And that's, of course, been an ongoing story. And sadly, we've had the Harry and Meghan thing, which when you listen back to the death of the Queen, it makes what they've done, I think, even worse.
Well, it will never be the same, Steve. And I think King Charles has a difficult job in front of him, because I think even with the Queen's funeral, everyone was okay with the expense and the pomp and ceremony, yep, because it was a farewell to not only a monarch, but a farewell to a monarchy that is forever changed.
And we need to thank Hugh, and we spoke to Hugh in the last hour of the program, of course, about your favourite documentary, the latest release of the Harry and Meghan tales. We'll look at some sporting moments later, and we'll also reflect on some of the other issues that have made news during what's been an extraordinary year. But we started the year, of course, in February, Natasha, February of this year, when Ukraine was invaded by the Russians. It's just awful to think what's happened there. We've been joined regularly by Kira Ruddick, the Ukraine MP, who's described it, and we've had the access to some extraordinary reporters, particularly Chris Reason from the Seven Network, Jeff Parry from the Seven Network, Hugh Whitfield was there, Sarah Greenoch was there as well. It's just changed the way that the whole world is living at the moment because of the energy crisis.
And I know also the focus is on Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, ongoing concerns about his health, and the fact that we're at almost this stalemate right now, Steve, where what, 11 months on? Russia is still invading.
Yep. February 21, it began.
And still, you know, almost 12 months on, the invasion is still continuing. The Ukrainian people, we know that the Russians have bombed local hospitals, maternity wards. And then, of course, just before Christmas, there was real concerns. We were on the edge of World War III. You would remember when we were on air, there were concerns that a Russian missile had been put into Poland, yes, which, as we know with history, that's what started World War II. Then there was a lot of conflict. Vladimir Zelensky was adamant it was a Russian missile. Then we realised it maybe possibly might have been a Ukrainian missile that was trying to fend off a Russian attack. And we were all on tenterhooks thinking, if this is an invasion of Poland, that's the beginning of World War III.
So 21 February, it starts, and then 3 days later, the full-scale invasion takes place. That's on the 24th in Europe, 25th here in Australia. And Vladimir Putin made it very clear that he thought they'd be in Kyiv within 3 days. Mm. He thought that this would be done and dusted. The Ukrainians had put their hands up and surrender. How wrong he's been. So what then happens, of course, is Ukraine begins to fight back, and we've heard horrific stories of war crimes, of torture, of people being raped.
Mass graves.
Chris Reason, 3 days after the invasion started, he was in Kyiv. He was in the UK. Remember we had that long chat to him earlier a couple of months ago? He was in the UK doing a separate story, and they sent him straight into Ukraine, which is a very dangerous thing. He described to us what it was like driving in from Poland, how they had to get through all these roadblocks. So we spoke to him on the 28th of February. By this time, Chris Reason from Seven, and thank you, Chris, for all the work you've done for us this year.
Extraordinary.
Chris was in Kyiv. You're in Kyiv. We are seeing reports that it's surrounded. How grim is it there? How tough does it feel to be in that spot?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a fascinating situation, Pricey, I mean, watching Kiev, it had been the sort of principal target for Vladimir Putin's forces, and they had expected to take it and topple it long before now. It hasn't happened, and this resistance that the Ukrainians have put up has not only shocked the press, myself, the world observers, but I think the Russians as well. They weren't expecting them to be able to hold on this well. They had thought that they would be able to get into the city and take it by now. It hasn't happened. The mayor of Kiev came out today saying he now knows that the city is completely surrounded, all bridges cut and either destroyed or held, all roads in and out now held by Russians. It'll only be a matter of time. It probably only ever was going to be a matter of time. But look, at the end of the day, the resistance has been something that's just been something amazing to behold. And it's something that's being replicated across every town, village and city in this country. And I think it's something that's caught Putin by surprise. It just hasn't gone the way he'd predicted it would go.
If people want to get out, they can't. That includes you, presumably. So what's going to be the end point here? I mean, is that resistance going to be able to hold the Russians off indefinitely, or at some point are they going to get to the Ukraine president and the parliament and overthrow it that way?
Look, that's the way the game is supposed to work. That's what everyone assumes would happen. But it just doesn't seem to be working like that on the ground. And I thought, like you, that you know I'd be trapped and I'd be stuck here and there. And I've sort of refused to go into those high-rise buildings in the CBD. I'm sort of hanging out in the suburbs and moving around a little bit, sort of more low-profile, and being able to get out and just, you know, do some filming and doing the sort of stuff that we like to do for 7 years. But it's, you know, we're hoping that we'll still be able to be mobile, and we have been mobile. And there's sort of times in the day when you can pick the time to go out, and there isn't anyone stopping you. Sometimes it's full-on fighting. You can hear the gunfire, and you keep your head down. You don't move anywhere. And then the whole concept of the city being stuck and everyone being in there isn't quite accurate. And we've seen, you know, obviously tens of thousands of people flee that city and head mostly westward toward Poland and clog up those roads and the trains getting out just trying to look for any sort of salvation, sanctuary, and Poland has been providing it extraordinarily so. More about that later. But, mate, the situation of Kiev is an interesting one to watch. And I'm just not convinced. So someone was saying that Tuesday was going to be the day that it would fold. I'm not so convinced it's going to be that easy a playbook for the Russians. They're having trouble, mate.
How right was Chris Reason?
Absolutely.
And what does that say about putting people on the ground and reporting from where it happens?
Absolutely. And congratulations to Seven also for, you know, of course, there's a humanitarian disaster unfolding, but we all need to be across these international events, Steve. What's continuing to unfold in Ukraine is horrifying. And of course, this year, Volodymyr Zelensky yet again representing to us about courage and tenacity, that he was named Time's Person of the Year.
Man of the Year. Fantastic effort by Vladimir Zelensky. I mean, I just so pleased that we could replay that audio there from Chris Reason, because it takes you back to 3 days in. He's gone, and well, I don't know that this is playing out the way Putin thinks it's going to play out.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because concerningly, Putin has nothing to lose now.
No, he doesn't. I mean, one of the pleasures we've had on Australia Today, this is our last program on air, by the way, we were able to hook into Ukraine MP Kira Ruddick. Now, I can't tell you the number of times I got up at about 4 a.m. to talk to Kira. She insisted on talking to us on Zoom. You've seen her. Mm. She has the Ukraine flag behind her, the flag of the European Union. She ends every chat we have with
glory to you,
glory to Ukraine. You and I have joked and thought, you know, is this woman sitting in a basement somewhere in
Surrey Hills?
Yeah, but no, she went to Brussels.
Incredible.
Where she advocated for Ukraine to join the European Union, mm-hmm, and more importantly, NATO. She went to New York and addressed the United Nations. And we've had the privilege of being able to talk to someone who's actually in the Ukraine Parliament.
On the ground.
And she is such an inspirational person for her. Last time we spoke to her was on Wednesday this week. Mm. But let's go back. This is the 4th of November, Friday the 4th of November, when we spoke to her. Have a listen.
I think the world and political leaders still live under this illusion that there is a possible to figure out some agreement. And personally, I hope they will fulfill this illusion at some point. But politically, we understand that it will take time until all the countries will understand what we have learned a while ago, that it is impossible to get an agreement with Putin. I think the whole world still thinks of Russia as a super mighty country that that can do whatever they want. I think we have proved in Ukraine that they are not super mighty, that you can fight them, that you should fight them, and then you will see them step back. And this is something that the whole world needs to understand and take a stance and say, no, we are not sitting at the same table with Putin. This is my hope. And this is why we are proud that President Zelensky said that he's not going to be there if Putin will be there. And I do hope that that soon the rest of the world leaders will also take the stand and make Russia what it deserves to be, like a new North Korea, pariah between the countries that nobody wants to shake hands with, because the isolation is the only fast and good way for Russia to collapse and actually to stop the war.
Very strong woman, and she told us just on Wednesday that they're now heading into winter. The town of Odessa, 1.5 million people, no power. So they're still going to have to get through the cold of winter. And as I pointed out to her, Natasha, that if you look at history, weather conditions like winter, particularly in that part of the world, often decide what the outcome of a war is. So we will keep our fingers crossed for our friend Kira Ruddick.
And I also think this is instrumental in what happens with Vladimir Putin moving forward. There's been allegations he'll be assassinated, he'll have to step down, because this is incredibly, however he wants to spin it, an incredible embarrassment for him.
Yeah, and the Chinese have walked away from him now, so he pretty much is a world pariah. But what it's doing, it's impacting on every part of our lives, because the issue with the Russian gas and oil means that the prices have spiked in the UK and Europe, and that means that in Australia we're paying more for it, which means we're paying feeding into our inflation. So
we also should care on a humanitarian front, the fact that these people have been invaded by Russia, and, you know, it's put us all in a very difficult situation.
Let's bring it back home to the election. What was the date of the election? Can you remember?
Oh, I've tried to forget so much that has happened.
May 21, 2022. Seems like years ago. How long ago does it seem that we had Scott Morrison as Prime Minister?
A decade ago.
I know. Anthony Albanese wins and he goes straight onto a plane.
Yes.
Remember, and flew to Japan for the Quad meeting. Everyone thought, boy, that's getting into the job pretty quickly. There's only two of them in charge for a couple of days. This was a little bit of his victory speech on that Saturday night.
Tonight, the Australian people have voted for change. I am humbled by this victory, and I'm honoured to be given the opportunity to serve as the 31st Prime Minister of Australia. My Labor team will work every day to bring Australians together. And I will lead a government worthy of the people of Australia. Yeah! A government as courageous and hardworking and caring as the Australian people are themselves. Yeah! My fellow Australians, it says a lot about our great country that the son of a single mum who was a disability pensioner, who grew up in public housing down the road in Camperdown, can stand before you tonight as Australia's Prime Minister.
It was very Labor speech. It was very Whitlam-esque, actually. I mean, they'd been in opposition, we've got to remember, since 2007. So it must be sweet when you win an election like that.
Yet I do think there was an element of the lesser of the two evils, which we've seen of a failure of both sides of politics for a number of years. I spoke to you earlier this year. I always stay in the election line and listen to what people are saying. Every single year, I'd say for at least the last three or four elections, all I've heard people say, I don't know who to vote for. I don't like either. And I'm not inspired by either leader and their policies or vision for the country moving forward.
7 months in, I think Scott Morrison's reputation's been shredded.
Tatters.
And I think the research the Labor Party had done in the lead up to this election clearly was this: the people will vote him out. They're not necessarily voting us in. But they're gonna vote him out because they don't like Scott Morrison. He'd run his race, and I think his arrogance has been shown to be over the top, and I think his colleagues have turned on him. And when he did the the old trick of I'm going to be the minister for everything and didn't tell anyone, including Josh Frydenberg. I think that cooked his goose within the Liberal Party. Let's get on to much more generous and wonderful and exciting things. I know you're such a sports nut and you just love your contact sport and you love playing your touch footy. What was your highlight of the sporting year, do you reckon?
It has to be Ash Barty, Steve. I think all of us, she played in the Australian Open, winning the Australian Open.
I'd forgotten how long ago was that.
It was on the 29th of January this year. It seems like a lifetime ago. And, of course, she recorded a thrilling victory over American Danielle Collins in the championship at Rod Laver Arena. The whole nation was behind her. I think she found a lot of pressure. But what was extraordinary is what I love about Ash is she's incredibly gracious, she's tenacious, and that she then, just 8 weeks later after winning the Australian Open, made this announcement that shocked everyone.
And I just knew that for me, the time was right. I'd given absolutely everything that I could to this sport. And I knew that it wouldn't be fair to my team and the people that have invested so much time and energy into my life to not be 100% committed for them. So it's been a hell of a journey. I wouldn't change a thing. And I certainly have no regrets.
Remember the story that emerged that she'd actually thought about retiring before that?
That's
and
right.
Then decided, okay, no, I want to win the Australian Open. I want to win my home event, my home Grand Slam. And then she went out and managed to do that.
At the top of her game, retiring at the top of her game, and she revealed actually part of the reason that she decided to walk away when she was at her very best is she said that the pressure and media attention attached to competing at sport's highest levels had become disproportionate to the enjoyment of her playing the game. What I love about her is you can achieve anything, hard work. She's gracious and she's incredibly kind.
Why don't she make a comeback? I'd rather her still play.
Because that says everything about her. She's not there for the money or the accolades. She's there because she loves playing sport and she walked away at the top of a game.
And she said at some point that the pressure was just too much. I didn't want to have that pressure. I'm going to do something else. So she goes out and plays golf where she plays off a zero handicap.
Does that upset you?
That's too unfair.
Does that upset you?
It upsets me greatly. But she's not going to be there during this Australian Open, which is going to be pretty sad because she was number one in the world.
That's okay. I'm okay with that. She's walked away at the top of a game and she's shown what true sports stars should do, not be kind of ruled by fame and fortune because you love the game. And your mate, of course, the other big sporting highlight was Cam Smith with the extraordinary mullet.
Yeah, and that takes us to a completely different place because he has walked away from the PGA to take money with the LIV golf. But he won the British Open, which is an extraordinary event for an Australian to win. Here's what he said after that victory.
Had a lot of support out there, especially the Aussie guys. You guys really kept me going out there. Seemed like there was a lot of you guys out there, kept me plugging away, and this one's for Oz. Thanks, guys.
Well, Cam's back in the country. He is playing tournaments through the Australian summer, but this whole live PGA thing has to sort itself out. A great year it was. It's been a great year for you and I think, Natasha. That's it for Australia Today in 2022. That's it for Australia Today. We're not back in 2023. It's been a great delight to work with you for the past 2 years. You are a true professional and your appetite for news and your obsession with COVID has been something to behold. So good luck with whatever you and the team are up doing next.
Thank you for all your support, Steve.
My pleasure. Good on you and goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this Australia Today podcast. For more of the news that affects you, download the Listener app and search Australia Today. Listener.